We'd like to take a second before this episode to thank our sponsor for this episode, Iowa Sports Supply. Iowa Sports Supply is locally owned and operated and has been providing quality sporting goods, uniforms, and corporate apparel for high schools, colleges, corporations, and Iowa communities for over 60 years. With your next team or corporate need, please visit iowasports.com. The Shooter's Touch and Iowa Sports Supply would like to remind you to support local businesses and shop local this holiday season. This week on the podcast, we bring on head men's basketball coach at Coe College, Brian Martin. Immediately when you start talking to Coach Martin, you can tell he's a basketball junkie. He understands thoroughly the X's and O's portion of the game, but it was most fun talking to him about the relationships formed during his coaching years with the players and fellow coaches. He comes to Coe after spending 4 years as an associate head coach at the University of North Dakota and actually brought that school and that team from D2 to D1. Very interesting talking to him about how him and the other coaches actually motivated their players to play that year and those following years because of the fact that there was no postseason, there was no conference affiliation, stuff like that. We had a great talk with Coach Martin. He's been in the basketball community here in Iowa for a while, at Indian Hills, at Simpson College, spent some time at University of South Dakota and North Iowa Area Community College as well. So he is the prototypical Shooter's Touch guest. We hope you enjoy the conversation as much as we did. Here is Coach Brian Martin.
I got the shooter's touch. Can't nobody shoot like me. Fourth quarter down three, need a 2-1. Better call on me, better call on me. If you know you need a shooter, I'm ice cold like a cooler. Get you right though, I can tutor. This that mic flow, I'm a hooper. I got blue faces on blue faces.
Welcome back, Shooters. We have another great guest on the podcast this week. We talked to head men's basketball coach at Coe College, Brian Martin. Coach, welcome to the Shooter's Touch.
Thanks, guys. Definitely honored to be on the show.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. First off, obviously a little bit of crazy times we're living in. How's the family doing? If I understand, three boys at home, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Thanks for asking. We're doing good, you know, as good as we can do, and everybody's healthy and safe, so no complaints there, and just been unique, you know, as is for everybody. We've got twin boys that are going through their senior year in high school at Linmar High School and hopefully getting ready for a basketball season if everything holds true. But so that's been interesting, you know, just dealing with all those challenges and the hybrid school for them, and you know, definitely not a normal senior year, but at the same time, thankful they're at least in school every other day and you know, having some normalcy. And then we also have a sixth grade boy as well. So, just making the most of it, and things are going good.
Well, good. So a couple things that I want to point out or clarify. Obviously, we have the same first name and spelled. There's not a lot of BRYs out there. So
we're spelled the right way, right? There's only a few of us.
Very few that I've run across that have been spelled the same way. So that's special. And then I actually have a Kellen. My youngest is a Kellen, spelled the same way too, with E-L-L-E-N. So when I saw that, I was like, hey, we got a lot in common. We just met, so.
You got great taste, Brian. Hey. Gotta give it to you. So,
one more thing before we jump in. You feeling any pressure being the second co-coach that we've had on the podcast here? You got a lot to live up to there.
Yeah, I mean, big shoes to follow. Kayla's awesome. We our offices are right next to each other. We talk a lot, you know, about basketball and everything. But fortunate that you know, to have her at Coe, and I think she's one of the, you know, she's an up and comer. She's one of the best young coaches, I think, in the country, and definitely blessed to have her at Coe. I know she did one of the first podcasts a few months ago, we're both kind of fighting the same challenges with COVID and with our teams and bouncing ideas off each other every day. So it's nice to have a trusted friend and colleague like her that we can, you know, share those thoughts and ideas and try to make the best decisions for our programs. But no, she's awesome.
Yeah, she's a good one. We enjoyed our conversation with her, and obviously excited to have you along with the journey here. And so with that, then fill us in a little bit about what childhood was like, where'd you grow up, sibling situation, and then ultimately getting into your sporting career as a young child. What was that like?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Des Moines, born and raised there. It was just me and my mom and my sister, who was just a year younger, growing up, and then also, you know, had a lot of family in town. Spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house, in the Beaverdale neighborhood. And, you know, my mom, my sister and I, pretty much grew up in the Beaverdale neighborhood, but, lived in a few different places. So it was kind of like half the time at our main house and half the time at grandma, grandpa's house growing up. But, had a great childhood. I mean, you know, ended up going to Hoover High School, and so kind of grew up in the Hoover community. But, you know, my grandmother actually, worked part-time at Hoover High School all through my childhood. And, you know, as far as sports, I mean, I can't, as far back as I can remember, even being alive, sports was, you know, important for me and something I loved. And, with her working at Hoover, we always got like free passes to the varsity games, and her and her friends would always go and just kind of drag me along on Friday nights or Tuesday nights, whatever the case, whether it's football, basketball, baseball in the summers. And so I kind of grew up in the Hoover community from a very young age. And you know, the better athletes, you know, in my younger days were just heroes to me, you know, growing up. And so that was a lot of fun. And then, you know, as far as neighborhood, you know, it was like the Beaverdale neighborhood where my grandparents lived, where we spent a lot of time. We'd go there after school, things like that. There were a lot of kids in the neighborhood, but they were all younger. They were younger boys. And so I was kind of the ringleader, you know, when it came to organizing, you know, pick up basketball or football games in the front yard or backyard. And, you know, so even back to a young age that I can remember, just kind of organizing a team or, you know, a game was always kind of something I liked to do. And, you know, then most of the houses we lived in with my mom, there wasn't a lot of kids for whatever reason in the neighborhood. So, you know, that's probably one thing that drew me to basketball a lot was, you know, all I needed was a hoop and a ball. You know, had a hoop in the driveway, and of course had some kind of Nerf hoop or something in the house or in the basement that you could play on when it was too cold to go outside. So always loved that with basketball, that you could always, you know, still shoot and you know, work on your game and have fun with the game, even if you didn't have a group of friends or neighborhood kids to compete with. So, but yeah, it was a good childhood. Like I said, ended up going to Hoover High School and, you know, had a great experience there.
So mostly basketball, or did you play any other sports growing up?
Played everything. Yeah. You know, whatever season it was, that was my favorite sport. If I had to pick, I'd say basketball was always maybe a little bit ahead of everything else, but played baseball, basketball, football starting in middle school, you know, but just recreationally played everything, tennis, golf, you know, whatever I could find or whatever was on TV, I want to go outside and play it. So, you know, even in high school, I played five sports. So it was, just loved sports in general. And, you know, really loved basketball, really loved baseball. Those would probably be my top two, growing up that I enjoyed the most. But, yeah, you know, it was different back then, I think. And Hoover was a big school, 4A school, but it wasn't a big 4A school. So still there was a lot of us that played multiple sports, you know, growing up and even at the varsity level. So a little bit different than it is today. Like even for my kids at Linmar, there's not a lot of that, you know, at the big school level. But yeah, just loved a lot of sports growing up.
So then put together a pretty good career at Hoover, playing five sports. Like you said, that's a quite the feat in itself, being able to manage your time and be successful at all those sports at a school like Hoover. But then you essentially went on and played a little in college too, correct?
Yeah, so got recruited, you know, by pretty much all the D3 schools in the state and some in the region, and, you know, had some interest off and on, you know, throughout my senior year from some D2s and NAIA type schools, and ended up going to Morningside College out of high school, which back then was Division II, you know. I graduated in 94 from Hoover. So, you know, you guys are too young probably to remember, but back in that day, the North Central Conference for Division II basketball was pretty big time basketball. I mean, you know, a lot of those schools now are Division I schools. When you look at, you know, the North and South Dakota schools, Nebraska, Omaha, Northern Colorado was in that. So a lot of those schools are D1 now, but back then were high level Division II schools. And, you know, went there on a partial scholarship out of high school, and had a great experience there. I was only there 2 years. My first year, decided to redshirt, mainly because we had a very veteran team my freshman year, some really good players that were, you know, great Iowa high school players too. Brad Barron from Cedar Falls was, you know, to me, he's still the best post player I've ever seen at any level. And, you know, he ends up Morningside College. Jason Kleiss from Orange City, Troy Larson, who's the head coach at Iowa Lakes. Those guys were all juniors and seniors. So I knew I needed to redshirt anyway. I needed to get stronger, you know, there wasn't going to be a lot of playing time to have anyway that year. So I did that my first year, and the year I redshirted, we had an unbelievable season. I think we only finished maybe second or third in the conference, but we earned an at-large bid into the NCAA tournament and ended up, the team made a great run and ended up making to the Elite Eight for I think only the third time in school history up there. At Morningside. So that was a great experience. Learned a lot, got stronger that year. So then my redshirt freshman year, played quite a bit off the bench, started a handful of games. We had another pretty good season. I think we were maybe 18-10 or something like that. You know, things were going pretty good. Really enjoyed it there. We had a little bit of turnover with the assistant coaches that were kind of the guys that recruited me. So, you know, it's, as you guys know, the basketball circles and the network and just how tight that is, it's incredible. So the two guys that recruited me the most were Dave Schlaubaugh, who is now the, you know, a rival coach here at up the road at Cornell. And also, by the way, I coached his son here at Co. So that was interesting how that all came together. Coach Schlaubaugh, and then the late Brian Pearson, who played at Pomeroy Palmer, and then, you know, ended up playing at Iowa State. Those were the guys that recruited me the most. And, you know, Coach Schlaubaugh left. Coach Pearson ended up getting cancer and tragically passed away, you know, at a young age. But, you know, so – and then we had some recruiting where we, you know, they brought in some junior college guys and things like that. And, you know, I just made a decision. I wanted to, if I was going to put all that time in, I wanted to play and have a chance to start. And so I ended up transferring to Simpson College, which that was the school that probably recruited me the hardest by far. And, you know, Morningside kind of was there, but came on strong late. And I would say most of my senior year in high school, I probably would have told you I was going to go to Simpson and end up transferring there and playing for Bruce Wilson. Had a great three year run there on some really good teams. You know, played a lot my sophomore year off the bench, and then you know, started every game junior and senior year. We ended up winning the conference in 97, 98, my junior year. Had a really good team, and you know, just, you know, as you guys know, the best part of college athletics, just the relationships you build, the guys you play with, and, you know, great friends with those players and coaches to this day. So ended up finishing my career and graduating from Simpson. And, but we had a great run there, and, you know, Coach Wilson was the best to play for, still talk to him quite a bit. our assistant coach was a guy named Chad Buchanan, who you guys may or may not know, who is now the GM of the Indiana Pacers. So, you know, you talk about a guy that's paid his dues and worked his way up. I mean, Chad was the RA in one of the apartments for several years at Simpson College and you know, coaching us during the day, but then, you know, keeping us out of trouble at night or on the weekends in the apartments. So, you know, funny how that all plays out, but yeah, so had a great experience at Simpson and you know, was happy with that decision I made, ended up being a good decision. So.
Well, and as you mentioned, obviously Morningside, I remember, like you said, in the mid to late 90s, I mean, those teams were competitive, and you would come down to Ames and play Iowa State, and so they were, I mean, they were playing some big teams, and like you said, Northern Colorado, some of those that are now gone to D1. That was quite the league at the time.
It really was. I mean, we were the only Division II in the state at that time. Of course, Upper Iowa is now, but you know, and as you guys know, recruiting was so different back then. I mean, there just wasn't the amount of exposure. There wasn't any secrets, or there are no secrets today. I mean, you know, you're playing in the summer, there's video, there's, you know, you're just going to find out about kids. Well, back then, I mean, you know, if coaches went out and did their homework and you know, you get some guys that were probably higher level players if you worked hard and built good relationships. And I think that was the case, certainly at Morningside and throughout that league, you know. And then, of course, at the Division II level, it's really a transfer league. I mean, you're getting guys that may play a couple years of Division I and move down, or you might pick up some junior college guys. So, yeah, it was high level basketball. I know. I think my redshirt freshman year, we beat UNI, you know, in the dome, and I think it was a few years after I left there, they played Iowa State, and it was a really good Iowa State team that they played right down to the wire. So. There wasn't a lot of difference, you know, between the D1 level and that some of the better teams in that North Central Conference for sure.
And then obviously moving to Simpson, and at that time the Iowa Conference was competitive as all get out too, and obviously has been for a long time. And we'll get more into the now Co-Simpson battle that I'm sure you have every time you go back to Indianola, but. From a playing standpoint, the league has been good for so long and had just a ton of players. No different, I'm sure, when you were playing.
Yeah, I mean, it was a battle every night. It was just a fun league, and you know, you had to bring your A game every night, or you were going to get beat. But it was different, as things are. I mean, back then we played Friday, Saturdays back to back, and every once in a while there'd be a Tuesday game. So. It was different, and, you know, now today we play Wednesdays, Saturdays. Of course, we've got synergy, and you know, teams are scouted more than they need to be. I mean, there are no secrets with what teams are going to do. You know, I remember playing at Simpson, and it was like you focus way more on yourself and being the best version of yourself. And, like, literally the day of shoot-around or the day of the game, we'd have a morning shoot-around, and Coach Wilson would hand us – you know, a photocopied piece of paper. It was just one-sided, you know, handwritten scouting report on Wartburg or BV or whoever it was. And, you know, some guys would probably study it and some guys wouldn't. We might go through one play or out-of-bounds play of the other team, you know, that they picked up on the two films they got, you know, and that was about it. You just went out and kind of played your system and tried to out-execute teams, whereas now it's – seems like it's so much more of a chess match, and, you know, you got to kind of add things as you go, maybe more than back then. But to your point, Brian, it was the competition level hasn't changed. The teams and the coaching and, you know, has always been a high level for Division III, and it's still that way today for sure.
You mentioned, I forgot about it. They transitioned out of it, I think my sophomore year at Wartburg, but the Friday, Saturday, the travel schools. So, like, we would travel with BV. Obviously, you guys would travel with Central. And so you'd play Simpson Central and whatever. And it was kind of a neat experience. But, yeah, I mean, the back-to-back playing, you know, Friday night, like, for us to come down to play in Indianola and then to go to Pella, was an interesting experience at the D3 level, because obviously we'd stay overnight and we would go and play the next afternoon. But it was also kind of fun. There was definitely some fun being able to get out on the road and play a couple games back to back.
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, like everything else, there was pros and cons to it for sure. You know, it's interesting. Like, I remember, you know, those trips as well. And for some of the weekends, you would have to, you know, do an overnight depending on where you're going to and how the schedule laid out. But, you know, here at Co, we never have an overnight trip in conference. You know, it's, and part of that is because we're pretty centrally located in the conference. But, you know, even when we go out to play Nebraska Wesleyan, we're hiking it all the way out there for 5 hours playing and hiking it back that night, you know. And of course, you just have Wednesday, Saturday, like you said. But yeah, so there's definitely been some changes over the years, and that's one that was certainly a big one.
Nothing worse than the drive across Highway 3 out to Storm Lake, though.
Yeah, fortunately for us up here, you know, it's pretty much a all four lane now with Highway 20, and it doesn't take quite as long. And yeah, some of those back roads throughout the state of Iowa, it all looks the same, but it you know, you got tired of those, and not quite as bad these days, I guess.
That was always the worst trip, because like you said, everything else, I mean, obviously Waverly and Dubuque and Cedar Rapids, I mean, all the other schools were all pretty close, but then going out to BV, and it probably didn't help that BV was really good when I was at Warburg too, so it was always kind of one of those trips where maybe the ride back wasn't as fun as we were anticipating, but that Highway 3 was
always a tough place to play, and part of that was just the journey to get there. But you know, the 3 years I was at Simpson, you know, we finished second, first, and second, and we didn't win at BV any of those years. And so, and I don't think we won up there in my first few years here at Co either. So when we finally, the first time that I ever won up there, I think it was about my fourth year here at Co, fourth or fifth maybe. And we had a huge second half comeback and hit a buzzer beater to beat them. And, you know, for me, it felt like winning a national title just because it's such a hard place to win at. So, but yeah, the trip up there isn't quite as brutal as it used to be.
And those four lanes do help for sure. Let's transition into coaching now. You know, was there a time in your life where, you know, you kind of realized that, hey, this coaching thing is where I want to go? Or, you know, obviously like a lot of guests we talked to, it kind of happens by chance too, but how did that play out for you?
Yeah, I think I always knew that it was something I wanted to do. I knew for sure I wanted something in the sports industry. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, just going back to growing up, I always enjoyed, you know, getting a game together or, you know, or even just working with some of the neighborhood kids that were younger that wanted to learn how to play basketball, things like that. So I always enjoyed, you know, that part of it, helping kids get better, you know, just the improvement side of things. And I don't know exactly when the day or moment I knew I wanted to coach necessarily, but I do know that, you know, my high school coach at Hoover was Bobby Sanquist. And, you know, he just retired last year from coaching at Johnston, is where he finished up his high school coaching. He was a huge impact on me growing up and really made basketball special for me in my high school days, and was a big part of me, I think, wanting to get into coaching just because of the impact he had on me, you know, throughout my high school career. And then as I got into college, you know, I remember thinking it was going to be something I wanted to do, whether it was high school or college. I wasn't 100% sure until about probably my junior year of college. I really was focusing on, you know, trying to do whatever I could to get to the college level. And I remember going into Coach Wilson's office early in my junior year and, you know, asking him, you know, hey, telling him this is something I think I really want to do, you know, what's your advice? How do I get into this deal? And, you know, you don't really realize it when you're growing up, how hard it is to get a coaching job and how, you know, how few of them there are open even. And so, but he gave me great advice. He at that time, you know, again, going back to Division II, he said, you know, the best advice he had for me was try to get a grad assistant job at a Division II school in the Midwest, because, you know, number one, most of those positions would pay for your master's program. and maybe a little bit of a stipend on top of that so you could survive. But also just from a coaching aspect, you know, those positions, you know, Division II, you had your head coach and most of them had one full-time assistant and then a GA or two. And so, you know, as a GA, you're pretty much thrust into a full-time coaching position. You're recruiting, you're coaching on the floor. You're doing individual work with guys. You name it, you're doing it and you're learning it. Kind of just, it's kind of an apprenticeship, so to speak. And so I remember, you know, once I kind of figured out that was something I wanted to pursue, you know, he told me just, you know, you need to try to, you know, these guys don't know you. You need to get to know them and see if they have a spot available. So I wrote a letter, you know, and sent in the mail to pretty much every head Division II coach in the Midwest, you know, all the North Central guys and in Minnesota and Iowa and Dakotas. I think all the guys in Missouri and down that in that league. And I literally heard at the time, I heard back from two coaches. I heard back from Kevin Lehman was at Nebraska Omaha at the time. He gave me a call and we might've had a couple phone calls. It was very early in the process. But he was, you know, he just told me, I think he knew Coach Wilson pretty well and, you know, said that they would probably have an opening that after I graduated. The other guy that actually took the time to get back to me was Coach Slagle, who was up at St. Cloud State for a number of years. I can't remember if he wrote me a letter back or called me or both, but we had a couple conversations. And it was very early, so tried to keep in touch with those guys. Well, then got very lucky. My senior year, we had a gentleman on camp or in Indianola named Doug Scholl, who, you know, worked pretty high up with the Casey's General Store organization for his career and did some other things. And but he was teaching part-time or teaching a night class at Simpson and was a huge basketball fan. And anyway, was a graduate of the University of South Dakota and was good friends with the head coach there at the time, Dave Boots. And somehow Coach Wilson got to know him and, you know, figured out he was a big basketball supporter and came to a lot of our games at Simpson those last few years and, you know, got me connected with Doug Scholl. And then Doug Scholl, you know, got me connected with Dave Boots and ended up, you know, just really stumbling into an opportunity to be a GA at the University of South Dakota right after I graduated. So, you know, that doesn't happen very often. And, you know, I've got guys that play for me here at Co all the time that want to get into college coaching and, you know, I'll do everything I can to help them and reach out to my contacts all over the country. And it's still just, it's really, really hard to, you know, get your foot in the door. So I was pretty lucky in that regard. And, you know, that's how I got into it. And then once I got into it, I really wanted to stay at the college level. I got my degree in history and in education so that I could coach high school if I wanted to or needed to. And, but just worked out that I was able to, you know, get my foot in the door in the college level and then kind of stay at that level.
It's funny how a lot of those situations, you know, getting into coaching kind of do happen by chance. And a lot of people obviously see the end product of, you know, you being a head coach, a college head coach, but don't necessarily know kind of what goes into that. And, you know, on the flip side too, you kind of referenced it that as a player, you know, you get that scouting report, you know, you get the coaches coaching you in practice, but you don't necessarily know how much of a time commitment. So at South Dakota, where did you go from there? And then, you know, when did the, you know, when did you slide into that head coaching role?
So did my 2 years of grad school in a GA at South Dakota. And then it got a little tricky after that for about a year or so, you know. And I think it's always a challenge, you know, to do that first 2 years as a GA, but then what, right? You know, so applied for a bunch of jobs, pretty much all levels. You know, Coach Boots, you know, did offer me a part-time job, you know, to stay on at USD, but it was very minimal pay. I don't know how – I got married right after college, so my wife and I were both up there, and I was – you know, if it probably would have been just me, I probably would have gladly accepted it. And then my wife got a job opportunity, in Des Moines, and as things were kind of going on, that was too hard to pass up. So we ended up moving back to Des Moines, and you know, I was in the mix for a few things coaching wise, both at the high school and college level, and to be honest, nothing really panned out. And then so that first year after grad school, I was kind of a part-time assistant back at Simpson for Coach Wilson, you know, just basically showing up for practice and games. And I was basically a full-time substitute teacher at Norwalk Middle School for a year. And, you know, I kind of went into that experience thinking, you know, all right, I'll give myself 1 year here and you know, take a shot at the college jobs again, you know, one more time after this school year, and hopefully something works out. If not, I probably need to, you know, settle into the high school scene. And so, you know, fast forward to that spring, and I'm teaching and coaching, and again, I'm applying for anything I think, you know, might be a good fit, and just getting nothing, you know, getting nothing back, no leads, you know, and it kind of drags on. It's now like midsummer, and my wife's kind of looking at me like, okay, what are you going to do now? You know? And I still really wanted to coach college. And so this is funny how things work out, right? You know, you go from nothing and like no opportunities going on. And then all of a sudden, literally like within 1 week, I have three opportunities fall into my lap, like all at the same time. So I'd applied for a head high school job at Tipton, which is up just north of Iowa City, I think, and had applied for an assistant position down at Indian Hills Community College. And then, of course, I'd always told Coach Wilson if Chad Buchanan ever left, I'd love to, you know, step into that full-time assistant job at Simpson. Well, all three of those things happened in like within a matter of 2 days. I get a call from Tipton saying they, you know, they want me to interview and, you know, that I'm a strong candidate for that job, and basically told Coach Wilson it was my job if I wanted it. I get involved with the Indian Hills position, and then Chad ends up, you know, making a move to the professional level for like a minor league franchise, which ended up being a good move on his part, by the way. But anyway, ended up getting an assistant job at Indian Hills Community College, which, as you guys know, is, you know, high level junior college basketball. And that was a whole new world for me. You know, I didn't know much about junior college, obviously never played at that level. But it was a great move for my career because, you know, going into that, you know, first of all, I was just excited to have a coaching job. So I was, you know, pretty fired up at the time, but going into that, my network was really just Iowa. You know, it was just Iowa guys that I knew and coaches and, you know, not much outside of that. You know, even through working camps and all that, it was pretty much Iowa or you know, maybe a few more Midwest connections. But, you know, you go down to Indian Hills and we literally have, because of the talent we have there, you know, we've got, you know, 3 to 10 Division I coaches in our gym every single day recruiting our players. And so within a matter of a year, and certainly over the 3 years I was there, you know, just built a huge network of coaches that I got to know. And then, you know, had a great experience there, worked for Lorenzo Watkins, who's now the head coach at Southeastern Community College in Burlington. But really kind of, you know, grew up as a coach, 3 years in Ottumwa. Lorenzo took a D1 assistant job after 3 years there. And so I had a choice to make. I was offered to stay on at Indian Hills with the new coach, which was kind of the plan. And then the NIAC job up in Mason City came open that summer, and I got involved in that and ended up, you know, becoming the head coach at NIAC. I think I was about 28 years old, Adam. You know, so head coach at 28, I really didn't have any idea what I was doing, but boy, I was excited to be doing it and to be leading a program. And, of course, NIAC was in the Division II Iowa JUCO League. And, so I spent 3 years there as the head coach and, you know, really, you know, obviously just learned a lot about running my own program and, you know, had some successes, some failures, and learned from both. And, you know, learned a lot from other coaches too. You know, I know you know, kind of a mentor, but a good friend was, when I was at NIAC, was the baseball coach, Todd Reima, you know, and he's now the head coach at Kirkwood here in Cedar Rapids, but, you know, just really learned a lot from him about how to run a program, how to treat people, how to recruit, you know, how to use your resources, all those things. And, you know, so had a good thing going at NIAC. We had some success and kind of turned the program around pretty quickly. You know, and my goal though was to try to get to the Division I level as a coach. And, you know, after my third year that summer, I got a call from Brian Jones, who was the head coach at the University of North Dakota. And I had gotten to know Brian when he was an assistant at the University of Iowa working on Steve Alford's staff, just, you know, through recruiting and also just through working summer camps when I was younger at the university. And, you know, and he was up at the University of North Dakota for a couple years. They transitioned out of Division II and they were making the move into Division I. And he gave me, they were able to expand the staff a little bit because of making that jump. And so he offered me a position to join his staff, and I jumped at it. And, you know, we moved the family up to Grand Forks, all the way up there. I think it was about 6 or 7 hours north of Mason City, and, you know, a little too close to Canada, but, you know, had a great 4 years up there working for Coach Jones and, you know, kind of leading North Dakota through that transition and into the Division I era. And, you know, was part of a staff that was able to kind of, you know, successfully make that transition, which is very tough for programs to do when you go from D2 to D1. Not a lot of programs are able to make that very smoothly. And you know, Coach had a great plan and we kind of did it the right way. And we struggled first couple years and took our lumps. But my last 2 years up there, we won the conference tournament that we were in and, you know, played in the postseason. And, you know, so had a great experience, loved it up there. You know, I didn't like the weather and some of those things, but, you know, great community, you know, just a great experience to be a Division I assistant. You know, the only thing that was bothering me was my kids were getting older. So my twins at that time were, I think my last year at North Dakota, they were in third grade. You know, my youngest was, growing up. But I remember my last year there, the twins kind of got on their first little, you know, travel basketball team. And I think they played like 45 games that year, you know, total with the tournaments and all that kind of stuff. And I think I saw like four of them, you know what I mean? So I kind of got to that point where I was at a crossroads, like that I really want to grind this Division I thing out and, you know, try to keep climbing the ladder, you know, whether it was hanging on with Coach Jones or, you know, trying to get another job or, you know, what have you. But really also I made the decision. Number one, I wanted to be a head coach again. And then number two, I wanted a little more balance, you know, between the job and family life. And, you know, so I got to thinking about, you know, what would that look like? Where were some places I might want to go? And, you know, I loved, you know, a lot of our family was still in Iowa. I loved my D3 playing days. So I kind of always had an eye on, obviously, the Simpson job because I played there. But then the co job as well. I just kind of always had my eye on that just because, you know, I think we wanted to kind of live in a little bit bigger of a city. You know, and Cedar Rapids is, you know, a nice community, nice city. And, you know, as fate would have it, you know, coaching, everything's about timing. And, you know, Coach Yuckum did a lot of great things here at Co, Pat Yuckum, and then took over, got hired that summer up at the, you know, closer to his hometown up in Wisconsin at Wisconsin Oshkosh. So the Co job opened up and, I went after it pretty aggressively and was able to get here. So been here 8 years, going on my ninth year so far.
Awesome. Awesome. And, you know, when I was in high school, Coach Jones was the assistant coach that recruited me when he was at Iowa. So I know Coach Jones pretty well.
You bet.
Yeah, he's a great guy. That had to be pretty rough, you know, making that transition, because were you there the first year that they were D1 up there at UND?
Yeah. Yeah, so my first year was their first actual year of Division I, and the first year was crazy because It was kind of a hybrid schedule. We weren't in a conference. We were playing an independent schedule for the most part. And we even played, you know, probably a third of the games we played were against Division II teams. And so it was really challenging, and we weren't eligible for the NCAA tournament at that time, you know, because we were making that transition. So, you know, it was a credit to those players. We had a pretty veteran group that year, a good group of seniors. And we really just made it all about those guys, you know, trying to make it the best year for them. But, you know, you talk about some tough coaching, you know, try getting your guys ready to play up at, you know, Southwest State in Minnesota on a Tuesday night after you just played Wichita State on a Saturday in front of, you know, 12,000 fans, you know, and then you go, no offense to Southwest State, but you go there on a Tuesday night and there's, you know, 500 people in the stands, and, you know, it's a pretty big contrast. And so we faced a lot of challenges with that process, but you know, again, coach had a pretty good plan. We kind of rode it out and tried to win as many games that first year with that group of seniors, and then basically started from scratch. We had brought in a lot of young guys that we redshirted that first year I was there, and really kind of built the program around those guys. And then, you know, that first recruiting class, once we were Division I, we were able to bring in three really good players that, you know, when they stepped on campus as freshmen, so that would have been my third year there, you know, we had a pretty good team. And we were part of a conference that doesn't even exist anymore at that time. It was called the Great West Conference. And it was basically a conference that was, you know, some schools that are now in the Big Sky, some schools that are now in the Summit League, and some other schools, you know, that were also making that transition to Division I. But it was like, it wasn't geographically, it didn't make any sense geographically, that league. I mean, we were playing, you know, teams in the upper Midwest, and we were flying down to Texas. We even played out in New Jersey with New Jersey Tech. And, you know, it was just to have a league and have games and, you know, have a conference tournament and that kind of thing. And but we ended up winning the Great West Conference those last 2 years. And at that time, we were eligible for the CIT tournament, the College Insider Tournament. So we played in that back-to-back years. You know, but a great experience nonetheless, you know, going through that transition. And then, you know, the last 3 years I was there, it was a full Division I schedule. You know, so some nights you're playing – guarantee games against Kansas or Iowa State or New Mexico. And then some nights you're playing Chicago State, you know, in front of 500 people. And, you know, so a lot of contrast when you're a low major Division I, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I actually had a couple of buddies on my AAU team who went to South Dakota State that first couple of years that they made the transition to. And yeah, I mean, they talk about going to Marquette, you know, and getting their butts kicked, and then going to St. John's, and then, you know, coming back, like you said, to maybe like St. Cloud State in Minnesota, and, you know, obviously playing them. But what did you do, you know, what worked for you guys keeping those kids motivated to, you know, actually play that year and the following couple of years?
Yeah, we had to get creative. You know, I think number one, they were excited, just the fact that we were, or they were the kind of the pioneers, so to speak, for the Division I era at the University of North Dakota. And we really, really just tried to sell that and, you know, kind of, you know, impose on them that, you know, no matter what this looks like, you guys are, you know, really starting off and, you know, building a legacy, you know, for all future, you know, North Dakota athletes and basketball programs. And, you know, again, credit to those guys, they embraced that. You know, at a very high level. And again, it wasn't always pretty. It was funny, like my story earlier. I remember we played, and this was kind of around Christmas break time. We played one night, we played down at Texas A&M, and they were loaded. I mean, they had NBA guys. Mark Turgeon was the coach, and, you know, there's 12,000 people there. And well, they didn't prepare for us very well. They didn't respect us very well. And it was like a 5-point game with a minute to go. And those guys, you know, you look down the sideline and their coaching staff's just, you know, sweating bullets, and Turgeon's yelling at his assistants, and, you know, why do we schedule these guys? And our guys were just, you know, competing their butts off and overachieving, so to speak. And, you know, we didn't win, but we gave them a scare. And then, you know, a few nights later, we're playing down at Wichita State. And I think it was the first year that I'm going blank on his name right now. The head coach that's there now was there. But Adam, you know about Wichita State. I mean, it's no matter how good their team is, there's, you know, it's sold out. It's a tough place to play. And again, we played those guys right down to the wire. Right. And then, you know, but then a week later we lose to a Division II school. And so it was just, but every night we just tried to challenge those guys, like just embrace this process. You know, you get to fly around the country and play now, as opposed to always busing places like you did in the North Central Conference. And, you know, just embrace it. And, you know, you guys are the foundation for everything that's in front of this program. And, you know, we tried to take care of the guys too. I mean, Coach Jones, if you know him, he's all about the gear. And so he loaded them up with gear, and, you know, we ate at nice restaurants and tried to stay in nice hotels. And, you know, fortunately we had a decent of enough budget that we could do some of those things and just try to make it fun for the guys. And again, it was a credit to those guys. They kind of laid it on the line and got us through that year and really set the tone for the program, you know, for the Division I era.
Now, would that have been an AC Law Texas A&M team? Would he have been there?
No, but DeAndre Jordan.
Okay.
He was on that team. Who's the other guy that plays for the Bucks or did play for the Bucks?
I'm trying to – because AC Law, I think, was 12, somewhere around 11, 12 maybe, so I didn't know what year you were talking, but I was like, I remember some of those A&M teams there for a while being real athletic, real competitive.
This would have been about 08 or – you know,
okay.
08 to 10 probably was the 2 years we played down there. So,
gotcha. And then you mentioned, so I was looking here, the CIT. So it would have been, so your last year at North Dakota was what year? 12, you said?
Yeah, 11, 12.
Yep. So 11, 12. So it looks like, just looking at the CIT results here. So in 11, it looks like lost to Air Force, and then 12 would have been a loss to Drake. And then that was that your last game at North Dakota? Was that loss to Drake?
Yeah, so we won the conference tournament, which was in Chicago, and then this is kind of funny. I think the conference tournament game was on a Saturday, and you know, it was a low major conference, right? I mean, it was just a conference that got us through the transition, so to speak, before they went to the Big Sky. But you know, we're thinking we're going to fly out back home the next day. Well, the conference said, well, we don't know who you're playing yet, but we're not letting you go home because we don't want to spend the money on flying you somewhere else. So we're going to find a geographic opponent and you're going to bust there. So it ends up being Drake, which was great because we had a lot of, well, for me, obviously being from Des Moines, but we had a lot of Iowa connections. We had a player, Pat Mitchell from West Des Moines Dowling, that was a senior that year, you know, so he got to go back home and play. Dean Oliver was on our staff. Of course, he was an Iowa guy. And Coach Jones, you know, basically was an Iowa guy. I haven't been in Iowa so long. But we won that championship game on that Saturday night, and I don't think we played until next Thursday. But they wouldn't let us go home because they didn't want to spend the money. So we, you know, that Sunday we bused to Des Moines, and we were literally in Des Moines at the Marriott downtown for that whole week. And just the guys were – It was so bittersweet because they were so excited, you know, to be playing and to be playing Drake. But it was just such a long week. I mean, we did about everything you could do in the Jordan Creek Mall, I think, that week, and ate at about every restaurant. And, you know, finally the game got there on that Thursday, and it was actually a really good game. But, you know, Drake came out on top that night. But, yeah, that was my last game on the staff at UND there at the Knapp Center.
Yeah, that would have been Phelps coached Ravonte Rice, a bunch of those guys on that team. So that's interesting. And then, it would have been that transition, which also one of the things I wanted to mention is you were kind of going through your timeline and you going from these jobs. This is obviously a time before Hoop Dirt and being able to jump online and see what jobs are available. And so you're obviously having to make some calls and check some postings to figure out where things are at. You know, early in your career, obviously that has changed a lot now too. But the one thing that remains, as you mentioned, is working these camps and just networking and getting to know guys. like you said, will just open up doors and opportunities to be able to make connections. And then with those connections come opportunities. And obviously then the opportunity came about for you to come to Co, and like you said, you had your eyes on it. And so other than that, what were you most excited about to get back in the front chair and be the head coach and take over a Co program?
Yeah, I mean, just from all aspects, again, I mean, obviously professionally, I was excited to be here and to be, you know, leading a program like Co at such a fine academic institution. And, you know, so very excited about just that opportunity. Very excited about getting back to Iowa, you know, just from a personal standpoint and from a family standpoint, getting to Cedar Rapids and, you know, again, just having a little bit more control of my time and balance with the job and with, you know, family and being able to watch my kids play a little bit more. And, you know, you still make a lot of sacrifices as a coach. I don't care if you're a high school coach or, you know, D3 or JUCO, whatever. You know, we still miss some games here and there, but it's obviously a lot better just because you're not gone as much with travel and recruiting. So certainly was excited about that. And, was just excited about the situation I was stepping into as well. I mean, Coach Yuckum had done a really nice job here with the Co program, and, you know, so stepped into a pretty good situation where, you know, all the areas that were important to me in terms of, you know, number one, the people here. Number two, you know, had they won before? Was there a tradition? There was. And, you know, was it a good school? You know, I think obviously I'm biased, but I think Co is one of the best academic institutions, certainly in the American Rivers Conference, but also in the region. And, you know, and then again, just the draw of being in a city like Cedar Rapids too was big for me and my family. So all those areas combined were just, you know, at the right time and right place. And you know, that's the thing I tell guys that, you know, whether it's my players or whoever that asked me about getting into coaching, and, you know, your priorities change as you go and as you get older. And, you know, your family can certainly have an impact on that, or just as you get older and go through different experiences. And, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, Division I was the only thing on my mind ultimately. And, you know, not to say that there was anything wrong with that level or is anything wrong at that level. And I had those 4 years at North Dakota were special, and I'm so glad I got that experience and thankful to Coach Jones for giving me that experience. You know, but like at this point in my life, I can't imagine with three young boys, I can't imagine the insecurity, you know, that goes with that. And, you know, there's some pressures at D3, but it's nothing like the Division I level, as you guys know. And, you know, so all those things combined were just, again, the right time, the right place, and just very fortunate that it all worked out. And, you know, humbled that I was, you know, asked to be the guy to lead this program.
Yeah, so it's 2012 then. You guys have been through quite a few changes, not only with your facilities. When did you upgrade your facilities?
So we've been in the new facility for 3 years. So this is our fourth.
Okay, so obviously that change, which was a nice and I would assume much needed change. You would agree with that. And then obviously change within the conference too. You guys going from the Iowa Conference to the Two Rivers. How many years has that been now? I've lost track on that.
Well, you know, the name of the conference, I think this was maybe the third year that it changed. It's essentially the same conference, just with the addition of
Wesleyan, right?
Nebraska Wesleyan. And of course, yeah. I think it was the year that I arrived at Co. Cornell had left to go back to the Midwest, so there was that change as well. But yeah, you know, we got 9 schools, and 8 of them have been in the league since I've got here, and just the addition of Wesleyan 4 years ago.
Yeah, which is however you want to look at it, inconvenient addition to bringing a program.
It's been a curse, you know. It's I remember. We had a coaches meeting that spring, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and we always knew Wesleyan had been, you know, kind of poking and prodding, trying to get into a conference. And, you know, and then I think our commissioner was concerned about, you know, just stability, as, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, there was so much movement at all levels with colleges and jumping conferences. And, you know, I remember all of us coaches, you know, him asking us in a spring meeting, you know, who's in favor of adding Wesleyan. And we all voted yes. I mean, the worst part of this job is scheduling. It's a nightmare. And so we were all for it. Hey, there's two less games we got to schedule and just makes our league stronger. And of course now it's like, you know, who are the idiots that let those guys in?
They've been right.
The league all 4 years, but you know, but at the same time, guys, it's they've made our league a lot better. You know, they really have. Everybody else has had to step up. And I think, you know, I was talking to a friend about this the other day. I think our league, you know, the Iowa Conference has always been strong and respected. But if you put it into kind of Division I terms, I think we've kind of went from a low to mid-major type of conference my first few years at Co. I really do believe we're like a high-major conference in terms of basketball. You know, as of the last few years, and of course, you know, Wesleyan's been a nice addition in terms of just making our league, you know, more competitive and a higher profile conference for sure.
And it just helps you get that recognition more on a national level. Obviously, even some of the established teams, you know, here in recent years have had nice national runs, but obviously having them there competing with the Final Four year in, year out definitely helps, like you said, the perception of the league. Like you said, puts you right up there with some of those D3 up in Wisconsin type leagues where just high level basketball. But as we look at your team, Coach, so you guys have kind of stayed steady throughout your transition, your, what'd you say, 8 years now there. But this last year, I think one of your better ones, had you at 17-10 or something like that. And so moving in the right direction, what are you excited for? What are you anxious about this upcoming season? Fingers crossed that we get to play some games.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it was a good year last year, probably our best year since we've been here, and you know, made it to the championship game. You know, falling just short against Wesleyan, but you know, I think to your point, Brian, we're happy about where the program's at and the direction it's headed, and I really feel like we got a lot of positive momentum right now. And you know, I'm not gonna lie, the facilities have been an integral part of that. I mean, I felt like I got a new job 3-4 years ago, and you know, but I didn't. You know, we you know, probably went from arguably the worst facility for basketball in the league overall to arguably the best. And you know, with recruiting in Division III, certainly facilities aren't everything, but they do matter. You know, and when you're not able to hand a kid a full ride scholarship for basketball, you know, they're looking at the academics, they're looking at the facilities, you know, the campus, all those things, and the community. You know, so now it's been a complete 180. We used to bring guys on campus and, you know, we'd show them the gym, but we wouldn't show them the locker rooms. We wouldn't show them the weight room if we didn't have to. Like, we just kind of tried to hide those things a little bit more. And now we have a wow factor. You know, we bring a kid on campus and, you know, we've got a beautiful 2,000-seat arena. I think we have the best strength and conditioning weight room facilities probably in the conference. New locker room, you know, new offices. So we're kind of spoiled now, so to speak. But, you know, it was kind of the missing piece to our program. I mean, we've always felt strongly about the academic side of things here, and that's continued. We've always felt Coe's campus was a beautiful campus. And again, being in Cedar Rapids has a lot of advantages for our student athletes. Now we finally have that, you know, the facilities that it takes to compete and get good prospects. And so, you know, back to your question, I think things are really in a good place right now. We had a really good group of seniors last year that led us to that, you know, to a good season and kind of taking a step in the conference tournament to get to that championship game. And, you know, we're going to miss those guys for sure, but we've got some really good players here right now, some good young players. And I think, you know, I think we'll be in contention again. I really do. You know, if we stay healthy and again, like you said, assuming we have a season and everything, but recruiting's been a lot better just because of, you know, having more, or having better facilities to show them. And of course you start winning some games and that helps too. And that's been the case the last couple of years. And, you know, I feel like we've always been, you know, some of the years our record hasn't been as, you know, as where we've wanted it to be. And you know, we had a couple losing seasons there in a row. But really, the whole time we've been here, I feel like our guys have been very, very competitive, you know. And, we might not have won the close ones here and there, but, those things are we're starting to win those, you know, and that's kind of the difference. You guys know it. If you play in a good conference, it really boils down to, do you win the close games? And a lot of times that, you got to be able to lean on your upperclassmen, your juniors and your seniors. And again, we were fortunate last year. We had a great group of six seniors, and, we were able to win those close games, won two conference games or two overtime games in conference. And, just a few wins can make a big difference in that record and in the standings for sure. So, you know, going back to my first year at Co, we had a really good team, but the league was loaded that year. And I know going into that final week of the season, we were in like a four-way tie for second place. And BV was in first place, I believe. And Luther, us, I can't remember the other two teams, maybe Wartburg and one other team. Like, we're just, you know, all knotted up, you know, going into that last week. And, we just happened to lose those last two. And one of them was an overtime. So you go from like being, you know, having a chance to win the league to finishing, I think, in a tie for fourth. And so that, as you guys know, you get to a competitive league, it really can boil down to whether or not you find a way to win some of those close ones. And that's still the case today. But, we feel like the program's in a good place. And, you know, that starts and ends with our players. We've got good players here that are doing the right things and really working hard.
Yeah, no matter what level of coach we talk to, the experience piece for the program and the roster is always the biggest. And so when you, like you said, once you win a few of those tough games, once you get a little bit further in the tournament, it just seems to be able to propel the team moving forward. And as you mentioned, obviously a little bit of an arms race the last 10 years in the league, everybody kind of getting their facilities updated, which also helps the league, but helps the recruiting, helps at all angles of that. And so, obviously, we have our fingers crossed and hoping that we get a chance to play some basketball and, like you said, see your team really grow.
Yeah, we're all doing that, and it's going to be interesting for sure. And, you know, the good thing, I tell our guys this all the time, I mean, I know our administration and our conference are going to do everything they can to, you know, support us having a season. And, you know, I think we will. You know, obviously this thing can turn on any given moment for better or for worse. But, everybody's doing everything they can to make sure we have a season, including our guys and the administration. So we're going to stay positive and keep preparing and we'll be ready when and if we do have one.
That's really all you can do right now, coach. Yeah. And, you know, as Brian mentioned, we talked to a lot of coaches on this podcast and all of them are kind of preparing for that, you know, but as you kind of mentioned, it can change on a day-to-day basis, which is what makes this so tough. But, at the end of our podcast, we like to jump in a section called Rapid Fire. Brian's going to hit you with a couple questions, and you just got to tell us what you think.
All right, bring it on.
All right, here we go, Coach. We talked a lot about your facility, but what's your favorite visiting gym or arena you've either played or coached in?
All time, you mean?
All time, yeah. You've been in a lot of them too, so you've got a lot to pick from.
If you're talking all time playing or coaching, coaching against Kansas at Lawrence Fieldhouse was pretty special. My last year at North Dakota, we played them on New Year's Eve day on a Saturday, so December 31st, and it was a game picked up on ESPN, and it was funny. The night of shoot around, of course, they're on Christmas break, and one of the assistants greets us, and as we walk in for shoot around, and kind of apologetically says, you know, we probably won't have many students here tomorrow, you know, being break, and it's afternoon game, and of course, we were a low major Division I team, so it wasn't like they were playing Missouri or something like that, but. Kind of set the table like there wasn't going to be many students there. Well, we pull up on the bus, and it was, for whatever reason, that day it was like really warm out. It was like 70 degrees, and we kind of pull into Allen Fieldhouse that day, and it was like a football tailgate scene. I mean, like going to an Iowa or Iowa State game, like the parking lots are just packed with people tailgating because it was so nice out. And like literally as soon as they opened the doors to the Fieldhouse, the rush of students came in, and the student section was full, you know, like an hour and a half before the game. And so just, you know, as you guys are basketball junkies, just the opportunity to play in one of the most historic venues of college basketball on ESPN was pretty memorable. And our guys did a pretty good job. Another funny story about that real quick. I had the scout for that game, and you know, they were loaded that year. They were like, that's the year they lost to Kentucky in the national championship game with some of those studs they had, Thomas Robinson and some of those guys. But our guys came out defending at a really high level. And at the first media timeout, we were ahead 3-0. And, you know, our guys were coming to the huddle and just like, we're all jacked and, you know, like, hey, we're shutting out Kansas, you know. And like literally the next two plays down the floor, they ran a cleared side pick and roll and just threw it up to the rafters. And Thomas Robinson just, you know, alley-oop dunked it. And that was the end of that joy. You know, I mean, the route was on, but was still a great experience and something I'll never forget for sure.
That's a good memory to have, that's for sure. Okay, so on all these road trips, is there a must-have snack that you got to throw in the bag or take with you?
Oh, boy. Must-have snack? Nah, I'm not a big snack guy. I'm more of a – I mean, I like to eat, but I'm more of, you know, where's the best spots, local spots to eat type of guy. I just got to have a beverage, whether it's water or – I'm a big Diet Coke guy. I don't know why. I'm not a coffee guy. I'm a big Diet Coke guy, so –
That works.
I will say, though, my part-time assistant, Kevin Bundy. I don't know, Adam, do you remember Kevin? He's a UNI guy.
Big I do. Yep, I sure do.
So he's a great guy on our staff, part-time assistant. He always brings a bag of peanut M&Ms, and it's like we can only have them if we win on the road trip home. So, you know, it's like our victory M&Ms if we're fortunate enough to win. So I guess that would qualify maybe.
Yeah, no, that's a good one right there. What about favorite basketball movie?
Probably got to go with Hoosiers. I know it's standard, but there's a lot of good ones. But that one just hit me at a time in my life that was memorable. I think I was, it had to be right around my eighth grade, freshman year, somewhere around there in high school. You know, and just, of course, you know, at that age, like, number one dream is to play at Vets Auditorium in the state tournament. So like just kind of seeing that movie was pretty inspirational at that time in my life.
That's a good one. I can't hard to miss with the Hoosiers, that's for sure. Okay, got a little hypothetical here. You and your team are out, or you and your staff are out on a recruiting visit and can't make it back to coach a game, but I have the power to go ahead and assign anyone to coach your team. Who would you trust to lead your team for a game?
Anyone in the country or just someone here at Cole?
Anyone in the country. Anyone you want to coach your team, whether it's a mentor that you've had, someone that you share similar philosophy, who would you trust to take your team?
I'll give you two answers. One is kind of the celebrity one. Tony Bennett's my favorite coach at Virginia. Like he's – I got so much respect for him, the job he does, and just how he goes about his business. But so that'd be kind of the celebrity or dream coach. But, boy, I'd have to say my college coach, Coach Wilson, man. He was such a great X's and O's guy and just probably the best teacher of the game I've ever been around. And then also just, you know, you talk about doing things the right way and being a first-class, you know, leader and first-class coach. I learned so much from Coach Wilson, so I'd have to probably give him a call and see if he could – fill in that day.
Perfect. What? Where is Coach Wilson at now these days?
Yeah, so he's retired now. You know, he's okay. He's still living in kind of in between Des Moines and Indianola. Once he wrapped up coaching at the professional level with the energy and the D-League stuff, he got involved working with Special Olympics of Central Iowa.
Oh, cool.
But I think has been retired from that for about a year or two. So
good. I remember Coach Wilson, so that's why I was curious. I remember his time with the energy too, so I knew he did that after he had left Simpson. But all right, so do you have a favorite basketball shoe?
Again, I'm just gonna go with an easy answer, an old school, the first Air Jordan, man. I mean, I think I was in fourth grade, maybe something like that, and course, Michael Jordan's my all-time favorite player, but just the impact that all that hype had, and then the shoe game, right? I was more into the shoe game back when I was growing up and in high school. I'm not so much into it. My boys are now, but I remember, you know, getting my first pair of J's for Christmas, whatever year I was. I think about fourth grade, and probably the best all-time Christmas gift I've ever gotten. So got to go with old school favorite.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Probably the worst basketball shoe. I mean, like, those things were not comfortable, right? I mean, they looked cool, but there wasn't much to them.
Yeah, technology's come a long ways from the shoe side of things, that's for sure. These kids get them playing now are way better.
Yeah, for sure.
So I know you said the greatest player of all time, but we're mixing up here with the shooter stats. Who's the best shooter of all time?
That just anybody, in my opinion, you mean?
Yep.
I'm going to go with a tie between Fred Hoiberg and Kyle Korver. So Hoiberg is a few years older than me, probably 4 or 5 years older than me, but I remember watching him. You know, back in the day, it was the old Metro Conference. Now it's the CIML, but, you know, I remember him playing at Hoover, and I was just a fan in middle school probably. He was like a sophomore, and I just remember, you know, he was already highly touted, obviously, but I don't know how many points he went for that night at Hoover, but like just, you know, watching him with open eyes just all the way through warm-ups and in the game, I literally don't think he hit the rim that night. It was like he scored a lot, but like everyone was like a perfect swish. I'm like, this guy's like the perfect shooter, right? Of course, obviously he went on to great things, but and then the Kyle Korver story is, and I told my team this a year or two ago, one of the guys asked me, who's the toughest player I ever played against? And the year, in my senior year at Simpson, it was after our season was over. There was a local guy that had put together an AAU team, kind of in that area of Iowa, and wanted us college guys to, you know, to scrimmage them as they were getting ready for AAU season. And Korver was, I don't know if he was a junior or senior in high school, something like that. And, you know, I was a few weeks or maybe a month after my last college game. So I wasn't in prime condition, but I wasn't far removed, right? And I remember guarding Kyle Korver just in a kind of a pickup scrimmage type of game. And he was so tough. And I told the guys, like, what I meant by that was, obviously he was a great shooter if he got a shot off, but like, he was relentless in his movement and getting open, and then also on defense too. I mean, he's not known as a great defender, obviously, at the NBA level, but, you know, just for a kid that was just a junior or senior in high school, like, he was special, like, just in how hard and how tough he was. I mean, he ran me in circles in that, you know, that 1 hour pickup game we had, and just it stuck with me, like, gosh, this guy is going to be pretty dang good. And obviously he's been one of the best. So those two come to mind right away for sure.
Those are great ones, and I love the Iowa connection too. So that's a good one. So when Adam and I get a chance to come see the Rapids catch a game, where do we got to stop to get a bite to eat before heading over to the arena?
A lot of good places. A couple of my favorites: Fong's Pizza downtown. It started in Des Moines, and actually, the owner of Fong's was a classmate of mine growing up, all the way from preschool through high school. But Fong's is always good and a good time. And then, there's a couple local spots not too far from Co. One is called the Irish Democrat, right on First Avenue. Huge menu, but they're famous for an appetizer. They have the fried cheesy wontons. You got to get those. And then, there's another spot. It's called Emil's Hideaway, and it's on First Ave, across from Lindale Mall, but it's called the Hideaway because it's tucked behind a Taco John's. But tremendous food there. Kind of a wide variety in their menu, but one of the better restaurants in town, I think. So those are a couple choices for you guys that I highly encourage.
Love having the local inside scoop. That's always the best.
For sure.
So one more here before I get to our final question of the podcast, but I have to ask, do you still allow your guys to do any trick shots, or what's the deal with that?
I know where you're going with this. I had nothing to do with that. So yeah, we, a few years ago, gosh, I don't know how many, probably been about 5 years ago. I left work. It was like a Friday night. I know our guys had played pickup that afternoon. And, you know, so it was like 5:30 at night. I'm on my way home for the weekend, in the spring. And I think our postseason banquet was like the next week. So just to give you a time frame, and I get a call from, our football assistant coach, Steve Staker, who was the assistant at the time. And it was unusual for him to call me on my phone. And so I was kind of alarmed, and Brian, it's Steve, what's going on, coach? And it's like, well, I don't know who it was, but somebody just blew up a backboard in your locker room. I'm like, or in your gym. I said, what do you mean blew up the backboard? I don't know, but it's shattered. It's all over the, you know, all over the floor, and you know, nobody's here. I mean, I just figured I'd call you. And so I come back, and after open gym, our guys were just, you know, messing around, having fun. And a couple of them, Jake Tim, our point guard, and Spencer Williams, who was one of our centers. Spencer's an athletic, strong dude, about 6'7", but really explosive. Jake does like some kind of soccer kick backwards over his head from like half court and into an alley-oop for Spencer. And, you know, he catches it and slams it home, and it, you know, completely shatters the backboard, rips the rim off. And so anyway, you know, we got to deal with all that. The AD's, you know, not real happy with the fact that we've got to buy a new backboard and hoop with 1 year to play in EB, you know what I mean? So, cause we're getting ready to move into our new facility. But anyway, somebody was filming it. One of the other players was filming it at a pretty good angle, and of course tweets it out or something like that. And then, you know, it starts gaining popularity on that. Well, then our SID at the time, Ryan Workman, decides he's going to send it to ESPN. And for whatever reason, they picked it up, and it was on the top 10, or maybe it was the not top 10. I'm not real sure which one it was, but you know, a few weeks or a few days later that week, you know, I wake up that morning, kind of my morning ritual, get a little breakfast, turn on SportsCenter, and you see your guys, you know, shattering a backboard in EB Fieldhouse, and it makes national news or national television. And just amazing how that all evolved. And but I had nothing to do with that, man. I didn't encourage it, and I don't really not condone it. I mean, as long as they're having fun, but take it easy on the backboards. We don't have the budget for any more new ones. So
that might have been the sign that it was time for the new facility, I guess.
Well, it was, to be honest, because I think that backboard, it was, you know, the big square ones, it was one of the big square ones. Yep. that really isn't even legal anymore. But I'm guessing that thing was a good 25 years old, if not older. So it was time, but just maybe bad timing.
No, that's good. I got to thank Kayla for that. She actually sent me that video yesterday, so in preparation. So I appreciate that. I thought that was pretty good. I'm like, oh, I got to ask Coach about these trick shots and what's going on.
But yeah, that was a pretty good story. So we got some publicity. I don't know if it was good, bad, or the otherwise, but it was publicity. And Not many D3 teams get on SportsCenter, so we'll take it.
Yep, absolutely. So, well, good, Coach. Hey, last one here we always wrap up with. You've mentioned it throughout the entire podcast here and talking about your experience. But tell us and leave us with this. What is the best thing about being the head men's basketball coach at Coe College?
Oh, without doubt, it's the people here and the kids in our program. Whether it's our coaching staff, our players, support staff, the alumni I've gotten to know over the years, it's definitely the definite answer to that is the people that I get to work with. And, I referred to my high school coach, Bobby Sanquist, as kind of being a guy that was an influence on me for many good reasons. And I remember him telling me as I was, you know, as a player, but then also as a contemplating getting coaching, he said, if you make it about relationships first, the championships will follow. And I've always tried to, you know, kind of keep that at the forefront of my philosophy. And, you know, things are going pretty good right now for us here at Coe. We've got a lot of goals in front of us, and we want to take the program to some places it's never been, quite honestly. And I think we're going to get there. You know, I really do, because we've got great people, great players, great coaches, great support staff, and you know, all the things in place. But it all goes back to the people we've got here, and privileged to be able to work with them and coach them and work alongside the people here at Co.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you taking the time. Obviously, we'll be following along again. Fingers crossed that we get to have some normalcy and get some basketball games in. We'll be cheering for you probably every game at Wartburg, and making sure things are going well for you and your squad. And again, we appreciate you taking some time with us, Coach.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot, guys, for having me on and for all that you guys do for the game. It's been a lot of fun being on today. So you guys take care.
Yeah, you too, Coach. And as Brian said, we appreciate it. And obviously to our listeners, we appreciate you. If you like what you hear, wherever you get your podcasts, we would appreciate a 5-star rating. You can find us on all the social media channels, on Facebook, The Shooter's Touch, and on Twitter and Instagram at Shooter's Touch IA. And as usual, shooters shoot. Cause I'm right in my mind, hustling harder than ever before. Saying I change cause I like when I shine. The diamonds hit different like Mike in his prime. I got the shooter's touch, yeah. Can't nobody ball like me.